Good evening. This is the Planning and Community Development Committee. My name is Cynthia Delstrino-Stanson. I'm the chair of this committee. I'm joined by Council Members Hogarty and Council Member McLeod, who's filling in for Council Member Quinn today. The first item on our agenda is the Economic Development Plan Community Engagement. And we have Derek, who will tee it off for us.
Thank you, Chair. So the item before you today, as you may remember, the City Council approved us entering into a contract with Community Attributes to create an economic development plan for the city. And at the time, the Council also had set aside some money for what I call enhanced community outreach. And so at the time that we went to Council for approval of contract with CAI, we said we would come back later to the council for more details and approval on the enhanced community outreach. So that's what this item is. And by the way, we do have Elliot Weiss with CAI. He's the lead staff member for CAI working on Tukwila's plan. And so he's on the call today. So he'll be available for questions. And perhaps after I speak, if you could let him just say if maybe I'll miss something or whatever. And so basically what this item is you'll see in the packet, the report here is just on page one. And I've outlined the basic types of outreach that we would do, and then also with the enhanced outreach. And so what we would like to do is have you look at under, the discussion area of all these different types of outreach opportunities, letting us know if you think we're going in the right direction, if you think we're missing anything, or if you think there's something that we really, don't need to do. We're not looking for the council to create an outreach plan in detail by date for us. It's really just, are we going in the right direction? And you'll see there that there's lots of city-hosted opportunities, like going to the boards and commissions. So we plan to do all that. A lot of those types of outreach things will be city staff, not CAI. So that would be Brandon, me, or perhaps other staff hitting the boards and commissions, different groups, parks and rec events, like National Night Out Tomorrow, all of that. In addition to that, there'll be community gathering places that we might use some of the enhanced the funding for having some kind of tables or something at those community gathering places, like outside of SAR or something. And as we go to those community gathering places, there may be times where we need to contract with somebody to provide interpretation at that time or translation. You'll see a list of community organizations. We have not contacted these community organizations yet. If we're going in the right direction, then we would be starting to reach out to these and see who might be interested and available to help. And those are probably ones where we would enter into contracts to compensate them for the work that we would be doing. And the type of engagement might be different based on what those organizations think fits their clientele the best. So they could be focus groups, they could be surveys, they could be something else. You see the business organizations listed there, and you'll see some other specific tools. Of course, there's going to be a website. Of course, we're having a survey. Of course, we want it to be mobile friendly. We're still trying to work on incentives to participate, things to make it fun. And then Elliot might have some ideas today on that. So with that, we're really just looking for your direction. And perhaps if you could let Elliot just correct anything I may have said here before.
Yes, please. Elliot, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah.
Great. I don't need to correct anything, Derek. I think that was spot on. We have come up with a proposed engagement plan. I should note that with the way the scope of work is structured, one of the earliest deliverables that we would have after getting under contract with you is a finalized engagement plan. So I think that just underscores Derek's point that we're looking to make sure we're moving in the right direction, not looking to finalize anything. But I think that all of the elements listed there, all the organizations listed there, we would look to as potential partners, potential avenues of outreach. We would tailor it to the extent possible to reach the various segments of your community that we want to participate fulsomely in this plan. And I do also want to underscore Derek's point about doing something fun. We want to get at different demographics. We've talked about creative use of social media, maybe gamification, if you will, of social media in some way that gives people a real incentive to participate and to participate over time or continuously throughout the process, maybe some sort of award or prize at the end. You know, we haven't fully designed this yet, but the idea that we could incentivize participation with younger folks that maybe don't normally show up to these planning level meetings by rewarding the extent to which their followers interact with their content is an idea that we're looking into. So I think we can have a lot of fun with it, and I think we can do a lot of good with it at the same time. And we're just looking forward to working with you on it. I'm also happy to answer any questions about the materials in front of you as well.
Thank you. Question from council members. Councilmember Hogarty.
Yeah, so my question is, I see what you're doing here, the community engagement process, the places that you're thinking about engaging and the people, which I really can't think of anyone else. That sounds good. Some might be more, well, I don't know if it's more appropriate, but the business, you really want to make sure you get the businesses and places like that, and maybe a little bit more time spent on some than others. That's how I'll say it.
Sure.
But what are you going to be asking or doing during this outreach? What's the point? So what kind of information you're trying to get?
Sure. So in the end, the information we're really trying to get will be what kinds, because it's all about what would be our economic development plan. So really it's about what types of businesses would they like to see us have more of in Tukwila?
Okay.
What types of businesses would they like to see us have less of? What kinds of other services or something would like to see more of in Tukwila? It's really that. And that'll the other piece of it is from a workforce perspective. So, and this is primarily for the residents. So it's sort of if you're a resident and if you would like to improve your income and move up the job career ladder, what's the skills gap that you might have in order to do that? Because some of it, so we can approach economic development from the workforce side, so helping residents get better jobs. And there's a lot of workforce development organizations in the region, so we're not going to be recreating the wheel, but if we see gaps there, then we may be able to leverage in the future. For instance, it might be something like, oh, the Regional Workforce Development Council doesn't realize we've got a group of this type of demographic in Tukwila, and they've got this skill set, and if we just pulled a few of these service providers together, maybe Highline Community College on some classes, they have classes with, you know, English as a second language classes, and they have classes they'll do in the business. I mean, years ago, where the Vietnamese church is today, right there on South 180th, there was a company in there, and they created these, they physically put together what they called harnesses, which are electronic cabling systems inside the 737. So they would assemble the cabling in here, and you didn't really need English to do it. You needed to read blueprints and know how to move the cables and move the blueprints, and these were good jobs. And but because they didn't have to have great English skills, there was a hugely diverse workforce in there. But that's an example where like a college like Highland could come in and actually do training with the business if you needed to elevate those skill sets to even go higher. So there's the workforce side is asking us as residents, what kind of businesses do you want to have more here? It's also asking businesses, what other kinds of businesses would you like to have here? And it's also asking the businesses, and what else would you like to see happen here to make it a better economy for the existing businesses? So it might not just be what other businesses we bring in, it might be what's their vision for the area they're in. Like what other kinds of uses would it be? What kinds of infrastructure do we need? So my goal is, and I think Elliot Burr in sync on this, is we want to keep the survey very simple, a very few questions, not only because of the language issues we have, but also because of people are busy. And really, so our approach would be very open-ended questions. We're going to input that information, get input into the survey, And then we will behind the scenes sort it into information that kind of draw out like, oh, look, 70% of the people that's responded really want to do something about workforce or whatever it is. And we started it out actually last week at the Planning Commission. So we went to the Planning Commission, or I went to the Planning Commission and introduced the engagement and started asking them the questions. And so these are the same kind of questions we go to the boards and commissions with. So we basically just asked the same kind of simple questions. We had 8 questions in the Planning Commission's agenda and just basically had a round robin with them about those kinds of questions. So does that answer?
Yes, thank you. I think that's a good.
But we're open to suggestions. So we, if you think, we want this to work. The city's waited a long time, and the council put in some significant resources. So this is our opportunity.
Yeah, I like the idea of just a few questions that really get to the point, because we got a lot of questions out there for our community right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so that'll be.
Years ago, you'd see these surveys. People are trying to have a 25 questions because you're trying to sort based on their mm-hmm. answer on the question. Mm-hmm. We can't do that now. We need to just have it be fewer than 10 questions, so it's very easy for people. It's almost like when you saw the budget that the city's doing with the budget outreach and the boards in the park. Those are very simple things, mm-hmm. and it's almost like we have to translate that to a mobile app to make mm-hmm. it basically simple.
I have another comment about those boards. So some of the things you were talking, about is going to things like National Night Out and having boards. I don't know that people really get tired of that. The survey fatigue, I think, is when I have to, scroll through or write a thing. But if you just walk over to a board and stick a thing on, I'm not thinking that creates a lot of survey fatigue. That's sort of like, you want my opinion on this again. And I don't know how that's my only... That's my observation. I don't know if you guys agree with this. So I like that is included.
And I think that's a good point. It's like, that's probably why we want to make it fun. I think as long as people are having fun, mm-hmm. Then we'll be able to kind of elicit the information. Yeah. So we just have to make it fun. Like you're saying with the boards, it's simple, it's engaging, it's three-dimensional, We could have, one thing that CAI did, which is one reason why we really recommended them, was years ago they did something where they had created a phone booth, like a fake phone booth, so people uh-huh. go in, they could speak and do their thing. And I mean that would be really fun. I don't think we're going to have the time to do all that, but if we can find other things, like if we get young people doing TikToks, where they're doing TikToks, it's a contest, like what Elliot was mentioning, of if you get followers or likes, whoever gets the most likes with a tech little TikTok on the AD plan or something, you win a prize. Let the young people maybe run with it. And maybe the TikToks, you'll just see, maybe it's everybody has like 8-second thing of just like, what do you want to see in the future of Tukwila, right? Maybe for them it's that simple, but then we can just sort of watch it and glean it, but it makes it fun during the process. But we're going to try.
Thank you.
I have a couple questions and a couple comments. A question is, has economic development gone out to the community before asking what they want?
I have not done that in a broad sense. So the short answer would be basically like in the last 18 years in a broad economic development plan like this, I would say the short answer is no. However, I think when the comp plan is updated, because there's this economic development, there's an economic development element of the comp plan, mm-hmm. I think there's always public outreach as part of that, asking people about the economy and the future. And I think there have been smaller, specific types of surveys. We've gone out to the community. So we did a lot of work surveying the community with Tukwila Village many years mm-hmm. ago. We did surveys at SARS. We did a lot of that about what do you want to see in it. But some of those were more targeted about, I think the strategic plan, I think there was outreach done for strategic plan that wasn't, again, specifically about economic development, but a lot of the responses came back about economic development, and that's why we have a whole, one of the 5 goals, strategic plan is all about economic development. While you're here, Nora, is there anything you can remember?
Yeah, I think that's probably... like what we said, we've had
economic development is an optional element of our comp plan, but we put it in because it was important to Tukwila. So we have, you know, as part of that periodic process, gone out to the public. But, you know, I think those are sort of big, more overarching policies where I think Derek's trying to get more granular.
But I wonder if we're going to find out with this larger effort what we already know from those smaller efforts.
I don't think, yes. I think we will find out. There's a lot of energy behind the things that if you sat around and said, what do we think the community really wants? I think the council and I think a lot of the staff kind of already has a pretty good idea of what, because people will vocalize it at all times, you know, during the years. And so I'm not expecting us to discover something completely unknown that people never thought about. It's more of, what's the priority? Where's the weight of what is really most heavy on people's minds? Because we'll get a lot of ideas, and it's a matter of winnowing it down and trying to figure out where the priorities are.
And I'm just thinking, you know, getting bang for the buck of $50,000. You know, we can spend that money and the effort and gather what we kind of already know. That's just what I'm wondering.
It's true. It's very possible. The hard part is, even though I just said what I said, you still never know what you don't know. And so the other part of it is sometimes the engagement process is not only about hearing, it's also about building consensus, building support then to move forward. And so it might be that the council might already have different ideas or have ideas of what the future should hold for Tukwila's economic development. But it might be that the council might have 10 top ideas, but isn't sure how to prioritize those 10 top ideas. But by the engagement, we might see where the interest is, and it might come out, oh, look, our residents or our businesses are really concerned about XYZ. Okay, I didn't realize how concerned they were about that. So maybe of these 10 priorities the council probably already knows, that might help the council say, oh, actually, these are the three then that really need to be the top three.
Okay. Under community organizations, I think that's where this one would go. I thought, oh, you've got the school district, so I like that. What about the Rotary Club?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. The Santa Rotary.
I'm a new Rotarian.
Yeah.
Just joined.
That's great.
Okay. And then I tell you this often. Or when we talk about it, that I think that the economic development plan needs to be done through a lens of technology. So what role does technology play in your economic development plan?
So, Elliot's listening to this. We had a conversation. So in our current scope, because you've mentioned before about smart city.
Mm-hmm.
So
if you want to track jobs.
Want to track jobs. So, Elliot, you feel primed yet to talk about what we added to the scope about smart city in terms of just that it's part of the scope and what that might be, or do you feel comfortable talking about that at this stage?
I've got a lot to say. I've been trying not to jump in.
I am.
So I will talk about the smart cities. I guess we call it a subtask in our scope of work. I just want to say as an overarching comment on all of the engagement questions that the questions we ask, the things we're trying to find out are different at different phases of the project. And I think a lot of what you've heard in the past probably speaks to an early phase of the project that might focus on defining Tukwila's economic vision, which is more specific than maybe a citywide vision that you would have in your strategic plan or in your comprehensive plan, but also answers some fairly fundamental questions like, what does vibrancy mean for Tukwila or in the context of Tukwila? Or if we're putting, you know, the hat on of any given resident, what kinds of economic opportunities might compel me to stay in Tukwila for the long term? And those are the ones that I think you all would have good intuitions about right now. But as we get further and further into the project, we're going to be looking for more and more specificity so that what we give you is actionable on the back end so that Derek and Brandon can actually go and implement these things. And so we have to sort of figure out what those questions are as we learn more and more about the economic opportunities that Tukwila has And I think we're always through the engagement process trying to sort of calibrate between three different factors. One might be, what are your existing assets, or what assets could you potentially develop? Because that's what makes Tukwila unique relative to any other community in the central Puget Sound region. What are your residents' preferences? Because obviously that deserves weight. Where does Tukwila want to go? But then third, what are the market opportunities, or what market trends have an impact on the range of possibilities, and how does that help us with, to Derek's point, the question of prioritization and resource allocation? So I just wanted to say that the engagement process will probably look like it's starting very broad, and it will funnel down to something very specific as we learn more and more. With regard to the data analysis, we did add a task specific to the smart cities question. Derek had told me that this was something that there was some interest in. And at the moment, the way our scope is structured, we have kept that at the literature review level, but we want to look in to see what studies have been done about the potential economic impacts of smart city technologies. And that could be individual smart city technologies, so case studies on adoption of, you know, smart street lamps or something like that. You know, I'm not necessarily an expert in this space yet. You got to do the literature review first. But, you know, it could be a larger suite. So if we look at what would it take to be designated as a smart city and how many different types of projects would need to be implemented, that might have an order of magnitude different economic impact. And so what we want to do is sort of mine the literature base to bring some information to light on how that could help Tukwila if you looked at implementing some of those technologies. And then I think to the question of technology more broadly, because smart cities is a fairly narrow concept within technology, by all means, over the course of this project, we would be looking at industries or subsectors that you could be targeting, either for recruitment or for business expansion, entrepreneurship supports, et cetera. And it's very likely that many of those will be heavily technological. And so I think there will absolutely be conversations about how to better leverage technology, how to support from a workforce development standpoint, the acquisition of technology skills that then in turn plug into some of those industry sectors or subsectors that you might be wanting to target. So certainly in a modern economic development strategy, technology is going to be a central part of the conversation. And for us, what we want to determine is, how is it most relevant for Tukwila? Did that answer? Derek, was there anything else you wanted me to speak to?
Not that I was asking. Did Councilmember Cloud answer?
It's a start. It's a start. I think that's something we have to do more mining on. If you talk to the technology department or those people, their ideas just go crazy on what could be done, what's possible. So I think when we're making a development,
full space there, I think that would be important to be a part of this plan, is really understanding and incorporating their vision or some way, because I know that that's a private development, but they're still very much a part of the future. Sure. Of Tukwila. And then understanding the perspective of the workers. I know you mentioned that those who, and you kind of have different approaches. Those who live here, like what are the careers of those who live here, and what would they like to do? You know, understanding whether it matches what's going on in South Center. Understanding those who do work here, like where are they coming in from? Who are they? Like, what are the industries here? And is there a match? Like, is there a gap, or are there people here that want to work here but can't? And then for the businesses, what skills are they looking for? I think you already had mentioned that, but when I thought about workers, so it's really, who are our consumers? Who are our workers, and what do the business owners need and the developers need to really thrive here?
Mm-hmm. We definitely will be personally calling the key property owners and the key developers and, you know, making sure we capture that information. Elliot, do you want to speak to the kinds of demographic and other information we would be gathering as part of the folks who are working here?
Yes, happy to. And I would reiterate, you know, those focus groups, we've got 8 of them scoped, and they can go deep in any given sector. So if your retail business owners are folks that we want to have really detailed conversations with, then we could do that. I mean, we'll work with you to choose strategically what groups we want to engage across those 8. But 8 is a good number, I think, and gives us a chance to have some really robust conversations. With regards to the data, a lot of those questions are questions that we can bring data to bear on. So Washington State has retail sales tax that's reported to the Department of Revenue. That data is publicly available. We can do an analysis of that data to try to ascertain what spending patterns are sort of favorable for Tukwila. So which sectors are seeing a lot of spending in Tukwila that we might not expect just based on the population base alone, and which sectors are not seeing a lot of spending, seeing maybe lower than average across the region. And that can help us to understand what consumers are coming to Tukwila for, as one example that you brought up. You asked about where people are coming from when they're coming in the South Center. And fortunately, the U.S. Census Bureau has a data set called LEHD, Longitudinal Employer Household Dynamics. It's a bit of a mouthful. Unfortunately, that data is not updated all the time, or it's updated on an annual basis, but always for 2 or 3 years in arrears. So I believe the most recent data we have right now in that data set is from 2019, but it still presents a fascinating picture of where people are either commuting to if they're residents of Tukwila, and where they're commuting from if they're workers in Tukwila. And so we will routinely employ that data to help answer some of those questions, or at least chip away at them. You know, the answers aren't always perfect, but you can draw a lot from data sets such as those. And so that's not an exhaustive list, but those are a few of the resources we might draw on.
Nice. I'm glad that data exists and that we'll get to have you analyze it for us.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
I thought of a couple other things.
Sure.
One is, you were mentioning, I can't remember, about the community development plan, and it was in this same committee last year, and we considered it a priority. It was really hard to get that off the ground because you needed some funding. And then, as you recall, we added that funding back in as a priority. So I just wanted to revisit that. Then the other thing that I thought about while we were talking is the fact that we've got 2 economic development agencies that I think you should look into tagging onto, and that is Greater Seattle Partners. Mm-hmm. And also the PSRC Economic Development District Board, because when we were talking about economic development in the future, they have some future plans, and part of it is the innovation centers. You might know about that, how they want to do the technology, and then how PSRC has had bids out for people to do innovation hubs, right?
Yep.
And so does that mean anything for Tukwila? So I think it would be worth touching base with Brian Surratt at GSP and at the Economic Development Board. I don't know. I just got on that board, so I don't remember all the players.
Sure.
But we had a meeting, and it was really interesting. And so maybe there's some nexus there. Maybe there's not. But check in.
Absolutely. And there definitely is some nexus. Like, one of those innovation centers is related to aerospace,
right,
technology. And of course, we've got a huge aerospace,
right,
in the area. And we've been focusing with Kent on making sure, you know, the Kent Valley Wall,
yeah,
and the whole effort.
Yeah, that too.
As an,
yeah,
example, like aerospace cluster, uh-huh, in one of the innovation centers. So yeah, we'll definitely check in,
yeah,
with that.
And I was trying to think if Soundside had the data about the commuting back and forth. It's probably old data now, though. But that's very interesting.
Yeah.
Where people are coming from and where they're going to.
Yep.
Really interesting data.
And we looked at that a few years ago. We just never rolled it out. But, mm-hmm, you know, if you look at Tukwila, if you look at the workers in Tukwila, you know, less than 15% of people who live in Tukwila that are working, mm-hmm, work in Tukwila.
Yeah.
Right? So most people in Tukwila, they work outside Tukwila because it's physically small.
Mm-hmm.
This is a regional economy.
Yeah.
And also, if you look at the people that are working in Tukwila, our workers come from all over the Puget Sound region, but we'll work with Elliot and get updated data, but
yeah,
that data is good. And
yeah,
and I see Brandon on the screen, and I'm guessing, Brandon, were you on to mention something about the survey done a few years ago with, do you want to speak to that really quickly? And
yeah, following up on Councilor Member Delestrino Johnson's question regarding consumers who come into the city, in 2017, 2018, we did our big survey as part of our branding process where we looked at we actually hired a professor out of California as part of our branding who went and did a survey throughout the Puget Sound of how people viewed Tukwila. Why do they come here? What were they doing when they came here? And what were our strengths? What were our weaknesses? And so that was done in 2017, 2018. We used lodging tax funds for that. One of the things that we're going to come to council for in about a month is we want to update that survey and go out again. Do it pre-pandemic or do it post-pandemic or at least hopefully at the end of the pandemic. But we've also been doing a lot more things in the city with marketing and promotion, and we want to see if we're having an influence. And I think that the timing of that works great, and we can use lodging tax funds for that element of it, that it would build good into all the work that we're doing as part of the economic development plan.
Do you have any additional questions?
I have an additional thought. I don't know if this is relevant for now, but there's no place to go in Tukwila but listen to music by night. So, for instance, where does that component come into, like, outreach and that? Would people be interested in night venues?
Absolutely. So when we get farther along, Elliot may talk me out of this, but my perspective is to keep the survey simple. We probably would not be asking that kind of a detailed question, but it'd be something very broad. What we'd like to see more of in Tukwila. And if we see that kind of a comment coming out of there, we'll be capturing all of those kinds of things and categorizing them. So then you would be able to see what other people are seeing. Now, with the focus groups, we might prompt some of those questions.
Yeah, I think prompting some of those might be helpful to see if there's interest.
Sure.
I'll add one more thing. As local businesses as well as small businesses, because most of our local businesses are small, but even just broadening that up to local businesses.
Sure.
So that was my, I was going to say that earlier.
Well, thank you for your time. I know we went over our allotted time, so we're squeezing more a little bit.
Yeah, we got some stuff. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We got excited
It's just going to be really interesting.
Thank you. All right. 2022 code amendment ordinances. And we have Max.
Everyone, can you hear me okay? Okay, cool. I got a nod.
yeah.
Sorry, I'm right next door. I was planning to attend in person, but my throat's getting a little sore, so I'm just playing it safe for you guys. So simply put, this is the 2022 housekeeping amendments. Presented this to the committee back in March. Went to Planning Commission for public hearing in April, later in the spring. And what we're requesting tonight is to continue to move this housekeeping packet forward to the Committee of the Whole next week, and then hopefully to the regular meeting for adoption after that. But the public hearing at the Planning Commission, there were just a few items that were different than what you saw at the committee meeting beforehand. They focused largely on the supplemental development standards for single family homes and kind of the process that we go through for reviews. So essentially changing some of the review types, bringing them down to a type one from a type two. So essentially that means that we review some of these standards as part of the building permit rather than having them go through a separate land use permit. So for example, if someone were to come in and say they wanted to do something that we have requirements for in supplemental development standards, like their siding needs to be traditional and use traditional materials and meet a certain design criteria that we set. If they want to propose something different or innovative or new that's not within that material set, then instead of having them apply for a separate land use permit, they can show that to us, and the director of the DCD is given the option to approve that as part of the building permit rather than having a separate path for the land use permit to make that determination. And then there are a couple other items as well. And just kind of reiterate some of the big ones, consolidating uses in our land use table to kind of clean up our land use table, taking out some of these old uses that no longer really apply, or moving them into another section. For example, software development was a standalone use. Software development these days is really more just of an office use, so we moved that into the office category. Little things like that to just kind of clean it up and, you know, make it a little bit less confusing of how is software development different than office? Well, it's not really. We should just go ahead and put those together. So I'm happy to kind of go through it if you'd like. Otherwise, I can kind of turn over to the committee if there's any specific questions that you want to dive into right out the gate.
Do you guys want to just ask specific questions, or do you want Max to go through each one? Specific?
Yeah, some are pretty straightforward.
Yeah. Councilmember Hogarty?
Yeah, I had, first of all, the building and land use permit combined, which one is that? Which title? Because I missed that.
As far as changing it from a land use to a building permit process?
Yeah. Which one is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so I will make the reference into the ordinance itself, the draft ordinance.
Okay, yeah. All right.
So that would be on page... It'd be starting on page 19 of the packet.
Okay.
And you can see there it says chapter 1850-055.
Okay. So it was the single family design standards exceptions.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, that was one of my questions. So yeah, I'll get to that then. All right.
Okay, great.
I'll try to go through these kind of quick. And then so the first one, noise generating events, of course, we've had a couple of different kinds of issues with noise. So this one addresses like the parties we've been having in the parks, or just talk a little bit about this one, Title 8.
Yes, let me
how that give solves a... what we've been going through.
I'm always hesitant to say it solves, but I'll say we're trying to make them.
It attempts to solve. That it attempts to solve. That's more accurate.
So that's on page, just to confirm, of the packet. We're in sync. Page 8, 7, and 8. Okay. That's the ordinance pertaining to Title 8. And essentially what we were doing here is that there was some kind of confusion about what residential parties meant, and it was very small in scope, essentially saying that in the case of residential parties, and prior to granting any variance, they'll provide written notice to all residents within 500 feet. We didn't feel that was broad enough. It also wasn't clear enough what residential parties meant. Sometimes people interpreted residential parties as, you know, a group of people, like a residential party. So we wanted to broaden that and say, or other noise generating events within a residential area, because that kind of broadens it out to include all sorts of things. So a residential party, I think, can be interpreted to be kind of a private party at someone's house, very narrow, whereas this kind of expands it out, and it's kind of like there are a number of things that could be considered a noise generating event within a residential area. And we also wanted to clarify that it shouldn't just be sent out to residents, but it should also be sent out to businesses in the area as well. So within 500 feet of where the party or event is being held.
Yeah, because couldn't like noise generating events be, they get 20 people with, you know, their chainsaws and they're doing, I don't know. So it could be something other than a party, right? So
definitely.
How do they usually notice? Is that something, do people just like go around with a piece of paper?
They typically contact the permit center, and we have a generation and a mail generating app within the Tukwila IMAP, where they can pull the addresses of properties within 500 feet of a given point. I will say that maybe the unfortunate thing is that it is kind of, in this case, as it's written, a honor code, because we don't have a permit for this level. So in this, if you're looking at page 8 and the way that our table is set up right now, a variance for a type 1 noise generating event for 30 days or less doesn't have a notice of application requirement. It does have a notice of the event taking place that needs to be sent to the neighboring properties. They don't actually apply for a variance that we're approving. They are providing us with an affidavit of distribution to prove that they have notified their neighbors.
But this is within the hours of 8 in the morning to 10 o'clock at night, right?
That's right. That's right, yeah.
So during, they're within code as far as making all that noise. It's just that if it's excessive, they need to notify people.
That's correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Does this pertain to the Sherlock discussions we've been hearing, or no?
Not really. Okay. I think that is more of an equipment, you know, an ongoing thing versus something that might only happen once a year.
Okay.
This might address some things that are happening in parks, I think, parks aren't residential parties. So that's what I was thinking, right? That was probably part of it.
Right.
So we can have a longer discussion about the noise ordinance. This was trying to have sort of a targeted fix.
Okay.
Yeah. So kind of clarifying in that table, you know, so when in that table on page 8, that you're looking at the notice of application requirements. We have a mailed notice of application for these like larger projects, typically. So like say when Sound Transit came in, they were doing lots of disturbance during their construction project. They're typically getting a type 2 or type 3. So they're doing a mailed notice of application as well as going through these other things where they're providing notice before every single event where they're actually doing the construction. Type 1 is really more of a one-off, like a residential party, or they're coming in to cut trees down on one day, but it's going to exceed their noise levels. They need to prove that they've contacted their neighbors.
So I have questions. If I ask a question and then you guys have questions, should we just like ask all of them
about like a specific?
Yeah, and then you might have more and I might have more rather than me ask. Okay, so that was my first one. My next one was on page 4. I just need to, you need to just explain this a little bit. Update references in the zoning code to environmentally sensitive areas to the new term critical areas. That's just word changing to match.
Right.
Okay. So that was that one. Okay. This number 3, to support the intent of the nonconforming provisions, add a requirement for bonding when the primary structure is going to be demolished while accessories were remained. I take it that people were demolishing their primary structure and not like sort of getting around something by that, or what was happening there?
I'll give a somewhat specific example where we had a home with a detached garage. They came in with the proposal to tear down the house and replace the house, and then they wanted to continue to use the garage though as like their shop for car maintenance and things like that. And this was on an LDR property, and so we didn't really have any mechanism to ensure that once they tore that main house down that it would be replaced with a house. And that's a primary use that's allowed to exist. A garage is only permitted if it's accessory to that primary use, so single family home being the primary use. So we wanted to kind of create this buffer period where, you know, if someone tears down their house, then they'll hopefully come in for a development permit to build their new house. We didn't want to stop them from being able to use their garage during that time, but they couldn't use that garage in perpetuity. So we came up with a mechanism to essentially ensure that if they're going to tear down a house, they're going to be replacing it with a house. If they don't replace it with the house, then they also need to tear down those accessory structures that were accessory to the main use of the property.
Okay. And so this went through Planning Commission and they got all the details. All right.
We'll speak up.
Okay. The tree permit exception. What, can you explain a little bit about that one?
Yeah, that was actually just kind of a simple Scribner's error, because we came up with the tree permit, but we never actually developed a tree exception permit. We've just been essentially reviewing exceptions that people have requested to a tree permit, you know, if they're showing that there's a reason that they can't do the replacement on site or if there's something else that's needed. We've already been doing that review. We've just been doing it as part of a tree permit. We never actually created a tree exception permit when the tree permit code was updated some years ago. So we just were like, let's just get rid of the tree exception permit. Everything's a tree permit, but we'll review exceptions as part of a tree permit.
So you're changing that form a little bit to add that, or is it there anyway?
Yep, it's essentially there. We've all the criteria references back to the tree chapter. So it's all listed within the tree chapter, exception criteria, replacement criteria, and the like.
Okay. I want to ask about the landscape requirements. I'm not really quite, what changed here? It says buffer. It changed the buffer requirements? Was it just lining up with what was in the code?
Yes, so the landscape code was updated some years ago, and we have, maybe I'll use one as an example, if you don't mind me skipping to a page. So on page 21 of the packet, we developed a table that has landscape standards for each district, and they're broken out into the yard type, so front yard, side yard, rear yard. That was our new landscape code, and that was meant to essentially replace all of our previous landscaping requirements. When that landscape code was implemented, it was realized sometime after that we actually hadn't removed the landscape requirements from before, which were not consolidated like this table, but they were each separately within each zone's development standards. So on a following page, I'll use another example, page 27 and 28, that's one example. That's our MDR development standards. What you see on page 28 are the old landscape requirements that were still there, and they hadn't been removed yet. So we went ahead with this housekeeping amendment, removed those old landscape requirements, and had them all just reference the table, which is the original intent. And then the issue that we also noticed with the table that was created when we did the landscape code update some time ago, and going back to that table now on page 21, you'll see that we've made a few small changes there. A couple errors that existed is that we have our setbacks for each yard. Hopefully this clears that up. We have setbacks for each yard, and we realized that in some cases, the new landscape requirements that were put together were actually larger than what our setback requirements were. So people were coming to us and saying, oh, my building's only required to be set back 5 feet, but you're telling me I need 6 feet of landscaping. How do I do that? And it was just kind of realized over time enforcing the code that that was kind of an error, and we just needed to rectify it so that the landscaping requirement was never greater than what the setback requirement was. So just in a few zones where that existed, but we got that cleaned up in this housekeeping.
So that was just cleaning that up and making it all match. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have okay, the next one is 12, the revised supplemental development standards. So you remove the requirement for to have a 512 roof pitch. I'm not really even sure what that means. I mean, what's a 512 pitch? So in other words, now people can have flat roofs. Is that what that is? Or and then the second one is, that one was pretty straightforward, and you talked about that a little bit. But what's the roof pitch? I thought we had a whole thing about roof pitches.
So I will say that this is one of the sections that came from the Planning Commission recommendation. So we came in the original committee recommendation. We had a code interpretation that we're asking to have implemented because the 5/12 roof pitch was creating some confusion. Originally, it was an ask for the 5/12 to apply to 75% of the house, just so people are clear on, you know, how much of my roof needs to be pitched 5/12. The Planning Commission and their review of the packet thought that the 5/12 roof pitch itself should be removed as a requirement. As they saw that it was inhibiting alternative design or creative design of homes that may be proposed. And so their recommendation came out of that public hearing, actually. And so what you're seeing with a couple of these, and I'll clarify those now, were Planning Commission recommendations. That was to remove the requirement for a 5/12 roof pitch entirely. And then also, as part of those supplemental development standards for single family homes, we have requirements for facing a door to a front yard. So they recommend keeping the requirement that a door be faced to a front yard, but if a house is proposed to have their front door not face the front yard, they'd still need to meet the criteria for why you would not want your house, your front door facing the front yard. But they wanted to remove the criteria that regardless, if you couldn't get your front door to face the front yard, you had to set the house itself back twice the minimum setback requirement. So I'll go to that chapter. I'll try to make that a little bit clearer. But in the supplemental development standards on page 19, you can see what's proposed to be the new section 2. It says the criteria for approval of a house with the front door that faces the side or rear yard as follows may be changed. If it meets this criteria, the topography of the lot is such that pedestrian access is safer or more convenient from the side or rear yard. I'll go through the ones that they want to keep. The entrance is oriented to take advantage of a site condition such as the significant view, and the entry is integral to a unique architectural design. The one that they wanted to nix was the house will be set back at least twice the minimum front yard setback. Part of that was that it seemed a little bit contradictory to if there's, you know, topographical issues, then you're orienting your house to be accommodating that, but then we're asking them to set it back twice as far, which for LDR would be 40 feet because the minimum setback for LDR is 20 feet. So we'd be asking a home to be set back 40 feet. And the Planning Commission asked what that requirement was for. There's really no part of the code otherwise that clarifies why that double setback requirement is there, so they recommended removing that. Still making an applicant go through the requirements of prove to us why you can't put your front door to the front of the house, but not then asking them to set that house back twice as far.
Okay. And for these ones that are like this, I can go back and listen to the Planning Commission to hear what the reasoning was in more detail for that and mm-hmm. what the conversation was about that. That'd probably be good. And then the last one is the sign code. I don't think if you could just explain that a little bit, it wasn't
very controversial, but I was just like, I just want to make sure I know what was happening here.
Definitely.
I don't the definition of murals. What you just provided a definition of murals. That's why I had this. It's like, so anyway, can you talk about it?
Yeah, definitely. We used it's always helpful, and unfortunately, we don't have video of the planning commissions up at this point. They're minutes, or they're just audio. The visual was really helpful in the planning meeting. I'm going to share my screen real quick. The discussion kind of came up around this proposal that we had for a store that had its logo incorporated partially into a mural. And we wanted to kind of break out what is a sign in that regard and what's a mural, because we don't want to discourage mural art, you know, even if it's kind of tangentially related to the activity of the retail business. And one of the good examples is Nike has been proposing these murals at their Nike stores, which incorporate their logo, the swoosh. And then in other cases, they have murals where, you know, it's saying Nike, Nike, Nike throughout. So we came up with this definition that essentially said murals are acceptable. Any text or logo related to the business would not be considered as part of the mural and would be considered a sign and would need to be conforming to the sign code requirements. And so that kind of just made it easier to break it out as this area is a mural. This area is a sign. We're not kind of stretching the gray area between what's a mural and what's a sign. And so in this case, we'd be regulating the swoosh as the sign, but the rest of the mural could exist, even though it's showing an activity related to the store's functions. It's not text or logo related to that.
So that would be allowed in Tukwila, that particular one, the Nike swoosh sign would? And that
the
mural with the swooshes would, but not the other one.
That's correct. Yep. As long as the swoosh was fitting within our sign size requirements, we'd permit it.
That was it. Thanks for letting me go through all of those. I appreciate it. And thank you, Matt.
Of course.
I have one on page 15. Section 2, the new definition for airports. So airport means any area of land that is intended for landing and taking off of aircraft. What about drones or unmanned aircraft? So what if an aircraft leaves the roof of a Microsoft building and lands at the roof of something in Tukwila? Is it landing on an airport?
That's a really great question, council member. We actually were working off of our existing definition. We didn't have the definition for airport in our definition section. We pulled it out of the land use table. So that would be a good discussion to have.
Okay. Well, I think, I don't know how this is now because of COVID, but in Dallas-Fort Worth, they were ready to start testing these back in 20 and or maybe 1920. In 21, they had set a date. They were wanting to do some of this stuff. So it isn't that far away. And you can see with our traffic, a company like Microsoft might say, look, we can get the plane. We can take it off from here. If we got a space to land it, what is in our policy for something like that?
That's actually a good question. I wish I had an answer for you, but that might be something worth exploring. I think there probably would be some area in our code, depending on speaking with the city attorney, of like, may not be considered an airport, and we might be able to find an area for that, but I think we should discuss it in the future.
Okay, well, you have some homework now.
Yep.
One other one. On page 59, it talks about the number 22, the movie theaters with more than 3 screens. And this comes from page 53 is where it's at in this matrix that you have. And I wasn't quite sure I fully understood it, but do I read that like 22A, that somebody wanted to start a movie house, the applicant must demonstrate through an economic analysis that the theater will not have significant financial impact on any other theater in Tukwila?
Yeah, and so those were, 22A was existing code.
If I wanted to open a theater down in the Tukwila South of four movie screens, I have to demonstrate that it's not going to impact the other ones.
I may.
Yes.
So I think that was part of the whole development agreement discussion about competing with South Center. I think there was some concern about stealing market share from South Center when we really wanted Tukwila South. We had a different vision for what would happen down there, more office complex. Yeah. And.
But what about anywhere in Tukwila? What if they put out a crappy product and I want to compete against them?
So I think, again, the idea was to set aside Tukwila South for a unique vision and not just to have it cannibalize our other market share.
What page are you on?
59. 22A. But this goes beyond Tukwila South, doesn't it?
Well, I think that restriction is for ones in Tukwila South. Is that a CSO?
Yes, so. Oh, yes, it is.
So that it's, you can build a theater in South Center without worrying about that, but if you're building it in TSO, we were concerned about it stealing market share.
Oh, I could build one by the Boeing Access Road if I wanted.
So it was a whole.
The Tukwila South cannot.
Had some unique restrictions, like the warehousing restriction and having. We wanted services that would serve the office environment down there without necessarily being a second retail.
Okay. Well, let me think about that one second. We don't want to take away from the retail core up here, but if I worked down there, maybe I don't want to go fight all the traffic that would be up at the mall. Maybe I'd like a smaller version of something down there.
You can have two screens, right?
Okay. That would be a smaller version.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. That's it.
Good.
Oh, yeah.
I'm reading this over here.
I'm testing Max. He's going, oh, man, they're digging deep.
Yeah.
Do you have any more questions?
No. That's it.
Okay. I had a question on page 13. There's the first whereas it says the standards for non-residential development in the Tukwila South Overlay District were inadvertently struck when the residential development standards were adopted and should be reenacted. My question is just like, what happened here, and is there any significant impact on Tukwila South because of what happened here?
Simply put, when the chapter and the numbering happened for Tukwila South's adoption of their design standards, it caused the non-residential, so the commercial section of the code to more or less go away. And that wasn't accounted for, that should be remaining on top of the new residential standards. And because that numbering kind of deleted the non-commercial, it was just essentially assumed that those were going away with the rest of the chapter. And that wasn't the intent. The intent was that table for non-commercial design standards would stay along with these new residential design standards. So it's essentially just an error that happened with the kind of deletion and renumbering of that chapter. So in this case, just looking to reinstate what was there before.
Okay. And I think Kathy's question.
My extensive list, but
well,
everything. Thank you.
Let me just make sure. Yeah, that was all the questions I had. Okay, so this is going to the
COW.
How do you guys feel about moving it forward? Recommending it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I would recommend.
Me too. Good.
It's pretty deep, a lot of material here to read and go through.
Yeah.
But nothing jumped out to me that we would want to put brakes on.
Yeah, yeah. Most of it's turning it up to other codes. So
cleaning.
Yeah.
Cleaning.
I'll put it this way. It seems like small changes that we as staff are very excited about not having to, walk our way through the muck through on sometimes. So this, I think, will be a really clean process for us.
Yeah, it probably was a lot of work. Thank you to find all this and then figure it out and then get it all done. So
what's hard is finding more of it as you're writing it up and wishing that you had included it. Yeah.
Failing out the boat with the whole
thing. Yeah, exactly. So thank you. Yeah, I'd like to definitely commend the clerk's office for getting this together and doing the draft ordinances so well with little time. So they did a great job.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Max.
Okay. See you next week.
See ya.
See ya.
Do you have any miscellaneous?
Don't.
Nora? All right. Well, this meeting is adjourned. Thank you.